to health, wealth, and divine. My name is Jawanza. I am so very, very excited to have another opportunity to talk to you today. And I hope everybody had a wonderful day. It was a little chilly here in Richmond, but, you know, I'm still thankful. And so I just want everybody to sit back and relax because we've got a very, very informative show with you tonight. Got a very special guest. I'm always honored and feel privileged every time we have an opportunity to speak with my guest for this evening. We're going to be talking about affordable housing and grants. There are a lot of people out there that are looking for homes. There are a lot of people out there that for the very first time are about to embark upon making their dream of home ownership a reality. And I got just the person tonight to talk about the, you know, grants and so forth, because there are a lot of vehicles out there that are available to people that they just aren't aware of. And so we're going to be discussing some of those things tonight. And so I want to hurry up and get to my special guest. I've been waiting. You know, again, as I mentioned, you're in for a wealth of information. So I invite you to please don't be shy. If you have questions, if you're listening on the phone, all you have to do is press 1, and that will alert me that you have a question, and I can bring you on, and you can ask your question and make your comment. If you're listening via the computer, then the call-in number is 347-324-5727. Again, that's 347-324-5727. Now, let me tell you a little bit about my guest. My special guest for this afternoon is Donna Stallings. And, Donna serves as the Housing Program Manager for Southside Community Development and Housing Corporation, that's SCDHC. In her role at SCDHC, she's responsible for administration of the housing program as well as facilitating financial literacy and homebuyer education classes, providing one-on-one credit budget counseling and pre- and post-purchase home ownership counseling. She also oversees the Virginia Individual Development Account, that's VIDA as an acronym, matched savings program for the Department of Housing and Community Development. And prior to joining SCDHC, Ms. Stallings was a housing counselor for Virginia Supportive Housing and the director of the Asset Development Center for New Visions, New Ventures, a case manager for Home Again, and a program specialist for Rutherford Benefit Services. Additionally, she has 15 years' experience in the insurance industry, where she assisted with all aspects of life, health, disability insurance, and Ms. Stallings has a Bachelor's of Science degree in business administration from Virginia Commonwealth University. She is also a comprehensive certified housing counselor through the Virginia Association of Housing Counselors, a certified home ownership counselor through NeighborWorks, and certified housing counseling program manager through the National Council of La Plaza. Wow, that's a lot. And I can tell that you know, pardon me, from what you just heard, that she is more than qualified to discuss our topic for this evening. Again, if you have any questions, don't be shy. Just press 1 and we can bring you on board. We're going to be talking again about affordable housing and grants. So without further ado, Donna Stallings, welcome back to Jawanza for Life, also known as Health, Wealth, and Divine. It's an honor and a privilege to have you as my special guest again. Welcome back.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on.
You know, it's always an honor every time we have an opportunity to speak, because I really, really enjoy talking to people that have such a wealth of information and they are about the business of helping other people. You know, we live in a world today where, you know, everybody seems to be out for themselves. And so when you talk to people that actually have a heart to help other people, that's truly a blessing for me. It's a joy to have an opportunity to speak with you again today. And so we're going to try to talk about helping people to navigate through this maze of the home ownership process, knowing what's out there for them, because there are a lot of people that just don't know. This can be a very, very confusing for some people, process. And when you have someone like yourself who is a counselor and you do it and you've done it for years and you can actually help people, take them by the hand and guide them through the process, that is such a blessing. And so, again, just very, very fortunate to have you as our guest today. Now, if you could, just for starters, let's talk about your corporation that you work for, the organization that you work for, Southside Community Development and Housing Corporation. What is the function of Southside Community and Development, and how that might differ from other organizations like, for example, Home Ownership, I'm sorry, Home Opportunities Made Equal, or the Better Housing Coalition? There are a lot of different organizations out here, you know, charged with helping people through the whole home ownership process. How does Southside, well, what is the function of Southside, and how does that differ from the other organizations?
Well, one of the things that we differ with them, we're all partner agencies. We do a lot of the same things. But whereas Housing Opportunities Made Equal offers down payment assistance, what we'll be talking about tonight, and Better Housing Coalition builds houses, and Southside does both, as well as counseling and helping people to become mortgage ready. Everybody that walks through our doors isn't necessarily in a position to purchase a home yet. So we work with them to get their credit straight and, you know, to get their budget working so that they can be able to become a successful homeowner. So with Home, Housing Opportunities Made Equal, they offer the down payment assistance like we do, and they do the counseling, but they don't build any homes. And then with Better Housing, they build homes, but they don't do any counseling. So we're kind of a one-stop shop. We do the counseling, we offer down payment assistance, and we have affordable housing.
You know, before we really jump really deep into the discussion that we're going to be talking about tonight, which is, of course, about grants and the different things that are available for potential homeowners, I always love to give the listeners just a background on what brought people to the work that they're doing. Because when I was just reading your bio, I mean, just counseling just kept jumping out, you know, counseling. You really work with people and actually counsel them, and it takes a special type of person to actually counsel. I mean, to counsel, you're a counselor, you know, and to have the patience and, you know, all of that to help people, you know, guiding people through that process. And, you know, it seems like it's a labor of love, you know. So what actually brought you to the work that you're doing today?
Well, I actually had to repair my own credit after a divorce to prepare myself to get ready to buy a house. So there were some things that I had to clean up, pay off, get more income so that my budget would work. And so in having to do it myself, I learned what works. And then I started by, you know, telling my friends and helping other people and family and friends that I knew to do the same thing. And then it ended up being, you know, on different jobs where that came into play. And then it just blossomed into a career. So it's something that I learned firsthand. And because of that, I wanted to be able to help others to be able to do the same thing, because a lot of people just feel like they can never buy a home. That either they don't make enough money or their credit is too challenged, and they just don't see any way that they can get there. And so if I could do it, anyone could do it, because my credit was just as bad as the next person, you know. So, you know, there are all kinds of reasons why people have credit challenges. Some people lose their job. You know, I had done all of that. I had gotten laid off, divorced, and had to move within 6 months of each other, of all those things happening. So I literally had to start over, rebuild, you know, repair, all of that. And so if I can recover from that, anyone can. And that's what I like to give people is hope, you know, because It can do it. It really can.
So I want everybody that's listening to realize that when you're hearing Donna Starling speak, you're talking to somebody that has experience. You're talking to somebody that has been there, and as a result of having been there, had to do the work necessary to come out of that situation. And through that, it actually sparked her into a career. So, you know, I just want everybody to know that you're not listening to somebody that just read a book and, you know, decided that this is what I'm going to go into. Life actually pushed her. Her experience.
Exactly.
Into her,
life experiences sometimes is a better teacher than the books.
Mm-hmm. Hey,
you know,
the life gets you to write the book.
Yeah, I tell you, one thing it did teach me having to, you know, go through that is it really taught me money management and how to stick to a budget. Because when you're laid off and your income is cut in half and then you've got double bills that you had before because you were used to two incomes and now you only have one, you learn how to make things work, you know. And so the book is good, but life experiences will teach you things you can't get out of a book. And one thing I know for sure is I don't ever want to be in that place again. So when I find myself, you know, overspending or eating out more than I know that I really should, I get a reality check because I know I don't want to go back to where I can't sign my name to anything. So that helps me to reel myself back in and, you know, be disciplined with my spending and saving. So I think sometimes when you have to go through it the hard way, it's a better lesson because then you are determined not to make those same mistakes again.
Yeah, I feel you. But by the same token, then you can actually, but you're helping people to say, hey, I've been through it. Let my mistakes, not necessarily mistakes, but let my experience be a lesson for you so that hopefully you won't have to learn the hard way like I learned the hard way.
Right, exactly. I share things that I know work because I've been with there. There's a lot of people out here claiming to know stuff and claiming to be, you know, credit repair agencies and debt, you know, repair and all that, and they really don't know what they're doing. You know, they think that they're helping people, but some of these agencies that are out there are actually making people's credit worse. And I know that because I end up seeing them after those people have messed their situation up, you know, more. So everybody that says that they are an expert isn't. You know, when it
everybody
comes
must.
To the debt and credit, there's no magic wand, but there's a lot of people out there promising that. You know, we'll wipe your credit clean. We'll, you know, we talked about that before when we talked about credit. But it really is knowing what you need to do to position yourself to be able to buy a home. And there are resources out there that people don't even know about. Like a lot of people don't know that down payment assistance exists. A lot of people don't know that there's affordable housing out there. A lot of houses come with down payment assistance attached to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some houses that, you know, depending on the neighborhood that they're in, they may have tax credits that they get for moving into that neighborhood. So there's all kinds of ways to make, you know, a responsible decision with your housing purchase and get assistance in doing so.
You know, I see the phone lines are lighting up. I want to welcome everybody. My name is Jawanza. If you're tuning in for the first time, again, my name is Jawanza. That's J-A-W-A-N-Z, like zebra, A. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. To all of the listeners that have been following Jawanza for Life, now known as Health, Wealth, and Divine, for any you know, length of time, I want to say thank you so much for your support. Don't take you for granted. I really appreciate you. And for all of the new listeners, I just want to say welcome, welcome, welcome. Tonight we're going to be talking about affordable housing and grants. You know, my special guest, by the way, is Donna Starling. And if you didn't hear me at the top of the hour, if you have a question and you're listening by phone, all you have to do is press 1. And then you can ask your question or make your comment. Don't be shy. You don't have to give your real name. Just, you know, they say that information is power. So, you know, you're listening again to somebody who knows what they're talking about. So if we don't cover or get to your question, don't be shy. All you have to do is just press 1, and then you can ask your question or make your comment. You know, Donna, when we talk about home ownership, it is still considered the American dream. There are a lot of people that are in the process of buying a home or considering buying a home. And, I mean, it is such a major purchase. Probably in many people's lives, it will be the biggest purchase that they ever make. A lot of things come with homes. Memories come with homes. I mean, you're putting your roots down. I mean, you're watching your kids grow in your home. I mean, that home represents so much to so many people. And so when we talk about home ownership, let's talk for just a brief moment about just the benefits of owning a home. We're going to get into the grants, everybody, but just for those who might be on the fence and thinking about, you know, I don't know if I should, I don't know, you know, it's easier to have an apartment, you know, I don't have to worry about cutting any grass or, you know, any of that. So let's talk for a moment about just the benefits of home ownership.
Well, the first benefit is that the money you're paying every month is going to go towards something. When you pay rent, you're just throwing money away. And if you're paying a lot of rent, you know, a lot of people that I meet with, they're paying, you know, $900,000 a month in rent. So you pay that every month for 20, 30 years, you're paying a whole lot of money to get nothing. Hmm. Whereas if you're buying a house, you're paying, you know, those payments are going towards your one day owning that house. And so that's a big difference. You're paying towards something that's going to one day be yours. And so you will have the pride of ownership. You'll have something to pass down, you know, to family members. You know, so you have something to see for your hard work. And also, when you're renting, the landlord has the option to increase the rent every year. So you might be paying $900 a month this year, but next year it might be $950, and then the year after that, $1,000. They have the right to do that. When you're in a house, when you're buying your house, you have more stability. If you have a fixed-rate mortgage loan, which they recommend for first-time home buyers, then your principal and interest is going to be the same every month. Now, your taxes and insurance will increase, but it's still not going to be the same like an apartment. And again, you want your property value to increase, so of course your taxes and your insurance would go up because you want to make sure that as your property value increases that you change your policy so that it covers the true value of your home. Because if, God forbid, something happened in your house, say burned down, and when you bought the house it was, you paid $150,000 for it, but now it's worth $200,000. You want to be able to replace it with a $200,000 house because that's what you had before. So those, you know, fluctuations will increase the mortgage a little bit, but not like the rent increases. And so buying a house is a very good way to build wealth. As you're paying down on your house and the property value goes up, you build what you call equity, and equity actually equals wealth. So that same example I just gave you, you bought the house for $150,000, it's now worth $200,000, you've got $50,000 of equity. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times people will stay in, they'll buy their first home, and maybe their income goes up or their family increases, and so now they want another house, a bigger house. Well, they can take the equity out of that home when they sell it and put it down on the next bigger home. So it's a way for you to leverage cost. Some people use it to expand the house they have. Maybe they want to renovate. Maybe they want to add on, you know, a bonus room or something. So there are a lot of things that you can do with the equity in the house, or you can just let it stay there until it's paid off, and then you really have a lot of collateral. So there's things that you can do with real estate. You also can, you know, buy one house, pay that off, and buy another one. You know, that's a lot of money in owning properties and renting them out. So there are all different reasons for being able to, you know, buy a home and wanting to buy a home. You get tax benefits. You know, if you're paying a rent, you don't get to write any of that off. But if you are buying a home, you get to write off that interest and the taxes every year on your tax return. So you're getting back just for having that home. And I know a lot of single people like myself, if I didn't have my house, I would be paying the IRS every year because I wouldn't have anything to write off. So that saves me from having to pay huge amounts in taxes every year, because before I bought my house, I had to pay taxes every year. And so now this gives me a write-off where I can actually get something back for a change. So there are all kinds of good reasons to own a home.
Everybody, my special guest is Donna Stallings of Southside Community Development Corporation, and we're talking tonight. I know people are like, where are you going to get to the grants? Okay, we are at that point in the show. We are about to talk grants, okay? Again, don't be shy. Press 1 if you have a question. Donna, because I don't want to take for granted it. Any or everybody knows when we say grants what they are, okay? People have heard the term, but I don't just want to assume that people know, because there are a lot of misinformed people out here. So, again, you're the expert. Let's talk.
All right, well, let me first explain the difference between grants and down payment assistance. Southside has down payment assistance, as does Housing Opportunities Made Equal. And also, I think if Better Housing Coalition, if they have assistance on their homes, then that's down payment assistance as well. With down payment assistance, it's usually a stipulation that you have to stay in the house for a certain amount of time. It's usually 5 years, but there are some neighborhoods that they might be revitalizing, so they've given a large amount of down payment assistance. And in those instances, it might be 10 or 15 years that you have to stay in the house. But it's typically 5 years.
Okay.
And if you stay in the house for 5 years, then you don't have to pay the money back. If you decide you want to move before the 5 years is up, then you pay a prorated amount back based on when you move out.
But whatever
grant,
reason. I'm sorry, Donna.
Whatever reason.
Sorry to interrupt you. If you move for any reason whatsoever.
Yes. For any reason.
Okay.
Now, with grants, those are monies that are given that's like free and clear, that you don't have to pay back, and there's generally no stipulations on them. So people need to make sure that they know the difference. And there's some banks, which I can't get into it too much because I don't know their different products, you know, because there are a lot of different banks and financial institutions that do things different ways. But say, for instance, if you go to a credit union and they say they have 100% financing, so what they're doing is they're including the down payment assistance in your loan. So you're still kind of paying for it one way or the other. So they just need to know that there is a difference with that. That's not a grant. That's they've increased. Some of them do it as a first and a second mortgage, and some of them they do it as just a different type of loan product. And that's why I said I can't get into the details of the loan product because each bank is different. But that's just something that they want to ask questions about. If they go to a financial institution and they say, we've got 100% financing, typically your interest rate is going to be higher and your loan amount is going to be higher because they factored in the down payment assistance in that loan. Does that make sense?
Yes. And that leads me to another question, which is it when it comes to the down payment assistance and the grants, an either or proposition, because you might have somebody that says, okay, I can use some down payment assistance, and they get the down payment assistance. Now, because they got the down payment assistance, does that disqualify them for any grants, or can they do both? Can they get down payment assistance and get a grant to, you know, help them out as far as maybe increasing the funds available to, you know, use as a down payment if, for whatever, the down payment assistance isn't quite enough, or will the
right.
down payment always be enough?
As long as they can show that there is a need, down payment assistance is based on need. So, say, for instance, someone comes to us, they've been to the bank, and the bank says their down payment and closing cost requirement is going to be $10,000. Okay, and they come to us, and we may have, let's back it up. Let's say the bank says they have $15,000 of down payment and closing costs required. They go to Housing Opportunities Made Equal, and they get 10.
Mm-hmm.
Then they can come to us and get the other 5.
Okay.
But they can't get 10 from us because there's only 5,000 left that's needed. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So you can get more than one as long as they can show there's a need for it.
Okay.
There used to be, years ago, opportunities where people could just get huge amounts of down payment assistance, and what it did was qualify them to get a more expensive house, but HUD kind of shut that down because those were the very houses that were foreclosing, because really the people were getting more house than they really could afford, and the down payment assistance and grants allowed them to do that. But it really costs, it doesn't help the payment all the time. You got to look at what that bottom line payment is going to be. I always tell my clients when they go and they're getting a pre-approval letter from someone on how much house they're willing to loan their money for, I tell them their next question needs to be, and how much is the payment going? How much? If you qualify me for a $200,000 house, what does that make my monthly payment be?
Mm-hmm.
Because then they need to decide if they're comfortable with that payment amount. And if they're not, then they need to choose a less expensive house. And a lot of times people don't want to hear that, but that's really what they need to do. Because you've got to remember, things are going to still happen in your life. And you're still going to want to go out to the movies, on vacation, whatever you like to do before. You're still going to want to do it when you get in that house. And, yes, people will say, well, I'm going to sacrifice since I'm buying a home. And you will for a little while, but you're still going to want to enjoy life, and you should. So you want to get a house that's affordable. So that's why it's good to be able to get the different types of down payment assistance and grants, but still stay within your comfort level.
Well,
now most.
That,
go ahead.
Sorry. Wouldn't the question that you asked them to ask to make sure that they ask, well, okay, I'm pre-approved for $200,000. What's my payment going to be? What's my mortgage amount going to be? Wouldn't that depend on the interest rate of the loan? The pre-qualification letter might say, okay, yeah, well, you're pre-approved for this amount, but let's say if the person hasn't locked in a rate, wouldn't that the question how much be determined partly by the interest rate?
Well, usually they give them that when they give them the pre-qualification amount. They
okay.
tell them the terms of the loan, what the interest rate is, and what they need their purchase price to be. They usually tell them that when they give them the pre-approval letter, what the interest rate is going to be. But, yes, and that's why they want to clean up their credit, because the better your credit is, the lower your interest rate.
Mm-hmm.
And the interest
Everybody,
rate is what drives that payment. So, yes, you want to get a good – and that's the other reason why people need to go ahead and stop being afraid and go on and step out there, because we don't know how long these interest rates are going to stay low. And next year we're getting ready to have a new administration, and we can expect there to be some changes no matter who gets elected. So we really, if you are in a position to buy and you've just been hesitating for whatever reason, I would encourage people to start really taking a serious look at it again, and don't wait, because we've had some low interest rates here now for a few years. So it's safe to say they're going up, you know, before too long. The question is how much?
Well, again, back to grants. Let's talk about the different types of grants that are available. I know that there are certain, you know, grants for certain jurisdictions. There may be grants for teachers. There may be grants for military personnel or ex-military personnel, grants if you're living in a particular rural area, grants for first-time home buyers. I mean, there are a lot of different types of grants out there. Could we go down a few of them and, you know, discuss what they are about? Because, again, the lines are full,
so,
and I don't know
where.
Let me go
over just some general things that most grants and down payment assistance are going to require. Most of them, you have to be a first-time home buyer, most of them. You need a minimum 620 credit score, and some banks are higher than that, but there's not too many that go below 620. You need to have any outstanding judgments and collections paid, and bankruptcies must have been discharged for at least 2 years from the date of discharge. Okay, and then there are always income guidelines for grants. Now, some of the grant, and one of the things too, the homes have to pass an inspection. So a lot of people are like, well, I don't want to pay the $300 to get the inspection. You know, they told me the seller had it inspected and I don't want to do that. No, you need to do that, and to make sure that you're getting a whole house inspection and that it's going to pass in order to get, you know, grants and down payment assistance. They want to make sure that you're not going to have some major repairs in the first 5 years of buying that home. So they've got to do that. They also, even though you're getting grants, and this is something that a lot of people don't realize, they still want to see that you have some savings. So typically you have to put about $1,250 into the transaction. So we always tell people, try to save about $2,000, because you want to have some reserves left in there after you put in your $1,250. And, you know, the $1,250 usually helps to pay for the earnest money deposit, the inspection, and the appraisal. Those are things that have to come out of pocket, okay, before you even get the down payment assistance. So you can't use the down payment assistance or grants to pay those things. So people need to be clear on that. All right, so, and that's pretty much across the board with all of the agencies that administer down payment assistance. Now, the different types of grants, you've got grants that might go for certain counties or the city, or some financial institutions have grants, and theirs are grants. SunTrust has them, Village Bank, Town Bank Mortgage, BB&T, pretty much the main ones in our area. They offer either $5,000 of down payment grants, $5,000 grants, or if they are in the healthcare profession. And I believe civil, you know, service like teachers, policemen, firemen, you know, in the service industry, theirs are $7,500. And then military, you know, they get a whole different types of grants. So the lender, whoever lender they choose to go to, they will know what those amounts are.
And these per loan, right? It's not like per person. Like, let's say you might have a military family or a family of policemen. I mean, it's not like the husband and the wife. If they're both on the loan, they each get that grant money, or that's just per loan?
It's per loan. Okay. And so, and that's a good question as far as the people in the household. So they'll go by household income. So if both you know, adults or whatever are working, they're counting both of those incomes in determining if they're eligible for the grant. However, sometimes only one of them is going to be on the loan, but it doesn't matter. They have to still use household income. Now, for a family, let's say it's a husband and wife and two kids. So that's a family of four. They can't make more for one of the grants that we have, let's say for Henrico County, they can't make more than $59,350. These are limits set by HUD.
Okay. Now, that's the maximum income requirement. Now, that's for the family, right? I mean, now, that's for the...
Right, that's for the family.
What about for a single...
For that particular grant. Now, there are others, like VHDA, Virginia Housing Development Authority. They have a program where they give assistance as well. And they have, four family.
That was the
they
first
can
example.
Make as much as $78,720. But now with the VHDA down payment assistance grant, they can't layer with any other grant. If they get that grant, that's all they get.
Okay. Now, what about a...
Go ahead.
Sorry, what about a single person, Donna? And I know it would probably vary from, lending institution or whatever, organization to organization, but the maximum income requirement for a single person, family,
okay.
Are there any grants?
For the HUD limit I just gave you, and this would be for Henrico, Chesterfield, Richmond, a single person could not make more than $41,550.
Okay.
On the VHDA grant, they can make as much as $68,000 for a single person.
Okay.
And
everybody... All you have to do is press 1. Go ahead, Donna.
And I said the banks usually go by that same HUD guideline, so the 41,550. A lot of them that have those grants, they go by the same HUD limits. Now, another thing to mention, which we run into this a lot because people don't know this, when you are getting down payment assistance, there is a maximum purchase price that you can get. So, for instance, for the city of Richmond, Henrico, Petersburg, Hopewell, those different areas, you cannot purchase a house that costs more than $185,000 for an existing home. And for a brand new home, it's like $219,000. For Chesterfield, it's $253,000 for a new home, and for Henrico, I believe it's $223,000 for a new home. No, I take that back. Henrico's $219,000. So that's important for people to know, because we have people go out and they're looking at houses, and they come and they get a house. Like we had someone that was trying to purchase a house in Henrico, and it was an already existing home, and the sales price was $193,000. And so we couldn't, they weren't eligible to get down payment assistance because they went over the $185,000. So
and
they
just
have
for
to
those
keep that in mind.
Things.
So it's a lot of little things that they need to know. That's why they need to call and ask questions if they're considering it. I mean, there's money out here to be given away. We've got some Henrico money, we're trying to get rid of by June 30th. So people need to go ahead and put those applications in because, it's not an overflowing amount. So, again, you can't just sit back. You got to go ahead and apply for it before it all runs out. But But money is there. Like I said, the banks have it, and if there's a need, then yes, you can get it from multiple sources, as long as you're not getting the VHDA down payment assistance. Because they have higher limits, but they don't allow you to layer.
Okay. For all of the listeners that are listening in there, you know, outside of the Richmond, Virginia area, then you're hearing terms like, you know, or words like Henrico, and these are counties in the Richmond, Virginia, Richmond area. So just know that we're talking about grants as a whole, but you know, we're kind of tailoring this discussion to the Richmond vicinity. Now, with this, and I saw your caller, if you have your question, you still want to press one again, and I can bring you back on. Is for all of Virginia, or just that Richmond, Henrico area, Chesterfield?
No, that's all of Virginia.
Okay. I'm going to come to you now, caller. I'm going to call the last four digits of your telephone number, please hold. 6111. Welcome to Jawan's for Life, Health, Wealth, and Divine. You're on the air with Donna Stallings.
Hi, Ms. Stallings. My name is Shawana Hall, and I have a question in regards to lenders. I guess from what I've just recently learned, there are specific banks that are able to provide the grant funding for the down payment assistance, or for both of them, but not all banks offer it. Is there a website, or is there anything that, like, where would I go to actually find out which banks actually provide this as a or provide the grant for people who are looking for assistance?
You can go to Federal Home Loan Bank of Atlanta. Federal Home Loan Bank of Atlanta, and then you'll have to look on there to see who their members are.
Okay.
And then once you find one that's in your area, then I would just call to verify that they still are a member.
Okay.
Because I know, like, in our area, Wells Fargo and Bank of America are not members of that organization. So they would not have access to those grant funds, but they may have some of their own. Like Bank of America is starting a new down payment assistance program of their own. It's brand new, so I don't know a whole lot about it. I just found out about it in February when I went to a training. So I have not put anyone through one of their loan products yet, but I understand from that training that they have developed a loan down payment grant program of their own. So
okay.
So they're not a member of the Federal Home Loan. They have their own.
Okay. And SunTrust Mortgage, I guess they are affiliated with the program for the grant.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, great. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate the information.
No problem. You're welcome.
Thank you for your call. Anybody else have any questions? All you have to do is just press 1. My special guest today is Donna Stallings. We're talking about affordable housing and grants, and if you're in the Virginia area, then all of this applies to you, okay? And if you're not in the Virginia area, then you can still take this information and get in contact with your lender, and you know, just, and there has to be an organization similar to Southside Community Development Corporation wherever you are. But this information, even though it specifically applies to Virginia, it can certainly apply to you wherever you are as well. Donna, what about debt to income ratio and the role that that plays in determining one's qualifications, or does it play a role?
Yes, it does. Very, very, very good question. Although there are some lenders who can increase that ratio a little bit more, when you are getting down payment assistance, they don't want your housing payment to be more than 31% of your gross monthly income, and they don't want your housing plus all of your other monthly debts. Debts like car payment, credit cards, student loans, things, monthly payments, to be more than 43%. So the front end, which is your housing, 31%, and then the back end is the housing plus the other monthly debts to be no more than 43. So just remember those numbers, 31 and 43. That's what they want them to keep below that. So we often get people who they may have good credit scores and everything is good, but then because of their income and their debt load, it actually disqualifies them.
Hmm.
So it's very important to get those debts down as low as you can so you're not going above those ratios. Because even, you know, if it gets it so high, then they're not going to want to, you know, do it regardless of how good your credit is. And I'll give you an example. We had someone applying for down payment assistance, and they were actually getting Social Security. I can't remember if it was for retirement or disability, but their actual check was about $2,000, just a little bit under $2,000. So let's say $1,800 a month is what their income was from their Social Security. Their credit was great. Everything was fine. We were putting the loan application through and then found that their payment was going to be $1,031. Well, that was almost 50% of what they're making. So that's over the 31%. So even though they had good credit and stable income, they could not do that because, and if you think about it, I mean, it may seem harsh. You're like, well, the person's got good credit. Why wouldn't you let them do it? Well, let's just think about it now. They're getting $1,800 a month. If $1,000 of that is going to be paid to the mortgage, that only leaves $800 to live off of. They got to eat. They may have some other little bills. You got utilities. You want to be able to still save some for a rainy day. And who knows what other – see, there – every bill a person has doesn't show up on the credit report. So when we're counseling, one of the requirements for down payment assistance is that they have at least $150 left over each month in disposable income, meaning money that's not designated to anything. So it can go in savings, it can, you know, go to the emergency fund, whatever. That ratio was created because they didn't want people to get overextended. Now, if you only have $800 left to work with a month, let's say between gas for your car, food, and any and utilities, that takes up $500. That leaves $300 left. What if they put money in church? What if they have kids they're taking care of? You know, you see what I'm saying? There's not a lot of money left when it's that tight. So you would almost be setting that person up for failure because you got to maintain a house. So there are costs with maintaining that house. You know, maybe every 5 years you're going to have to paint. Or if you want a large grass, like a yard, like I don't, but some people want a big yard, then either you have to cut it or you have to pay someone to cut it. And there's just maintenance, you know, that you have to do. So as I mentioned to you when I first got on the call, when I walked in this evening to my home, the heat was not on, and I don't know why. So that means I'm going to have to call someone to see why I have no heat downstairs. So there are always things that can go on with the home. So we don't want to put someone in a home that's got their budget so tight that they have no wriggle room. And remember, mm-hmm. I was saying how your expenses will go up even though you have a fixed rate mortgage. As the property value increases, your taxes and insurance are going to increase as well. So if you have it too close, there's going to get to be a point where it's going to put you in danger of foreclosure. And if any, you know, thing happens, you know, people that live on a fixed income, it's really hard for them because they don't really get raises. You know, it's going to stay the same. So So even though the groceries might start costing more and other things like that, that fixed income is still going to be the same. So that's why those ratios are very important. And I always tell people to take a look at your situation the way it is right now. Go home and calculate your rent. Take your rent payment and divide it by your gross monthly income. If it's over 31%, you wouldn't get approved for a mortgage with that same rent amount. So most people, either they're paying the same or they may pay a little bit more when they buy a house. Sometimes if they get a good affordable house, they may end up paying less, depending on what they're paying. So some people are paying ridiculous amounts in rent. But that's a good way to judge if you would meet those ratios. Look at what your situation is now. And then when it comes to your debts, add up your monthly car note, your credit card minimum payments, your student loans, and not the total amount that you owe, but the monthly amount you pay, any furniture bills, anything like that, not your utilities and things, but things that are debts, like things that, think of things that you pay interest on. Add up all of those plus your rent and divide it by your gross monthly income. And if it comes out to be more than 43%, then you need to start paying some things down.
Okay. She looks like Shawana's back. Let me. You ready to take another call, Donna?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
You're on the air, 6079.
Okay. Yes,
you're on the air. Welcome. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yes, can you hear? Okay, yes. So my question was about the, I guess about the whole, I guess if my loans are in deferment for college loans, does that count towards payment or, I mean, as far as like my debt payment, or how does that work if I'm currently in deferment while I'm in the process of buying?
So what they're going to require you to do is to contact the student loans organization and ask them what your monthly payment will be. If you have a large amount of student loans, which most people do now, they're asking them to inquire about an income-based repayment plan. Because it's based on what the monthly payment is, not the total debt. And and you really want to, they need to put the amount in writing, because if they don't have a stated amount of what your payment is going to be, then the lender has to estimate what that would be. And their estimate is based on 1% of the total debt. So you don't want them to do that. So you get the student loan people to write what the projected amount will be once they come due.
Okay. My next question is, how long should you be on your job at the minimum in order to, I guess, be in good standing so that they can see that you basically have long-term income?
Mm-hmm. 2 years.
Okay.
And now some people might change jobs, but as long as it's in the same industry, then that's okay. But if you say you were a nurse and then you go to be a firefighter, that's totally different. So they're going to want to see 2 years on both jobs. But if you were a nurse and you worked at George Washington Hospital and then you went to VCU Medical Center, it's still a hospital, same industry, so they would count all of that.
Okay. Okay, great. And then my last question is, I basically wouldn't qualify as far as the income for some of the maximum income requirements for some of these grants. I make about $80,000 a year, but my expenses, well, I currently now have been able to save more, but I'm just trying to see if the grant money is out there and I'm able to use it to get in a home. You know, quicker, then I would certainly like to take advantage of it. But would they penalize me because of my income? I mean, is that too much for any of the grants that are out there?
Well, I can't say for any of them, but because we've had some programs, and see, it would depend on where you live and what's going on in your area. But I know for like for City of Richmond employees, they have a special pot of money for employees that will purchase in the City of Richmond, and those incomes are even higher. And I think you might it's 120% of what the I don't have it in front of me for that one, but that one might have worked for you. And it depends on how many people are in the household and all of that. But they all do have some kind of limits, most of the time. I should say most of the time. And that's why I said it depends on where you live, where you're buying.
Okay.
Because we do have one property here, and I'm sure if we have it, every other, you know, state probably has them too. But we have one subdivision that does not have an income limit, and you don't even have to be a first-time home buyer. Now, first-time home buyer just means that you haven't owned a home or your name is not on any home for the last 3 years. So it doesn't mean ever. It just means for the past 3 years. So,
okay.
But this particular property that we have in Chesterfield County, you don't have an income requirement, and there's no you don't have to be a first-time home buyer. And our, the down payment assistance in that area is $5,000 towards the closing cost. So they give
okay.
some assistance there. So other states may have the same thing in certain areas. So it just depends. I think those type of programs come when they have designated certain areas to either develop or redevelop. So you
okay.
would have to your area and see if there are some programs like that where there is no income restriction.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for your call again. Question, and Shawana's call just made me think about this, and that is concerning cost of living. Because let's say you take somebody that has a high salary, but they live in an area, let's say in, you know, might not live in Richmond where the cost of living is much less than, say, up in D.C. or Northern Virginia. But let's
mm-hmm.
take Northern Virginia, which would still fall in Virginia. We're talking about Virginia. Would it be taken into consideration that although the salary may be high, the cost of living is higher too? So, you know, it kind of balances out, you know, what it's not like this person might not be the, say, you know, necessarily living on Easy Street, you know what I mean? But it sounds like, the, you know, it sounds like a very high number. But again, with the cost of living up there being higher than it is down here, would that play into consideration when determining whether or not a person is eligible and not just just ruling them not eligible because of their salary?
The only time that that comes into place would be with the VHDA loan, they do have higher limits based on area. And because, let's see, for, you said Northern Virginia, let's see. So here's an example of, where does that chart go? Bear with me.
Mm-hmm.
They have a loan.
All of the listeners online. If you have a question as well, again, just press 1 if you're listening. What shall I say? If you're listening by phone, press 1. If you're listening online, the telephone number is 347-324-5727. Okay, Don.
All right, so one of their loan products they have for Richmond, it would be $85,000 for a single person, and then in the Washington, D.C. area, it's $121,009. So for them, the area does allow for that. For the HUD limits, though, they typically don't. What I will say is where they do make allowances is in the purchase price of the home.
Okay.
So for where here I said they had like a $185,000 limit, it would be a higher maximum in those higher cost of living areas.
Okay.
VHDA also has a loan product, a grant product that has, okay, for the single person, I said $68,000, and then in the Washington, D.C. area, it's $97,520. So she might look for, you know, depending on where she lives, for one of those programs that have the higher limits. Because the limits that I gave you that were lower, those are HUD limits. And those
okay.
would be the same, I believe, across the country. I believe.
Everybody, this has been a very, very informative show. Donna, do you have a couple more minutes? Or does, I know we said
sure.
from 7 to 8. You good?
A couple more, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
If we could you talk about the importance of home buyers, especially, particularly, first-time home buyers being realistic? Because a lot of times, people that have bought homes before, you know, they know the process, they've been through the process, you know, and if they made any mistakes, they hopefully have learned and, you know, vowed not to ever repeat those again. But a lot of times, first-time home buyers are going to it with such excitement, and it's a beautiful thing to see. And there are times, though, when the excitement has to be tempered with realism. You know, you
right.
have to be realistic because you want this experience to be the most wonderful, exciting, pleasurable experience. Again, you don't want this dream to turn into a nightmare. So
right.
when going in, the more information that you have, the better. And
mm-hmm.
not just information, but right information. So when you're listening
yeah.
to Donna Stallings, you're listening to somebody that does this, okay? Because there are a lot of people out there that say, oh, I talked to somebody, you know, and they said this, or I talked to somebody and they told me that. And, you know, you got to make sure that whoever you're getting information from is qualified to give you information. Because if you act on that information and it's not correct, it can and will cost you. So let's talk
yeah.
about just being realistic for a moment, because there's a lot of excitement involved in getting a first time, getting your home, especially for the first time. I mean, it's exciting. I mean, you can see yourself in the home. You see yourself, especially sisters, they see themselves in the kitchen, you know. Brothers might see themselves in the yard. I mean, so, but let's talk realistically. Are you ready? I mean, not just barely ready. I'm talking about ready, ready. Okay? You
right.
really. Talk about that, Donna.
That's a good point. A lot of times people think that they're ready and they're not, or they don't have a realistic view. You know, as my grandmother used to say, you have champagne taste on a beer budget. And so you do have to be realistic. You know, I get this all of the time. People will say, well, I want to live in the far West End, you know. And so if anybody lives in this area, they know the far West End is a high rent district, as they call it. So I was often having people tell me this who were making, you know, around $20,000. So I said, okay, I'm going to get one of my realtor friends to tell me what the average cost is for a house in Short Pump, which is the far West End here in the Richmond area. And so he came back and he says, oh, yeah, houses out there, about $296,000 is where they start. So you're roughly saying $300,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, so let's do some numbers and figure out how much you would have to make to afford or qualify for a $300,000 house. And that's roughly $90,000. So I'm telling you, people that are making 20 are asking me about a $300,000 area to purchase. So that's why I'm saying you have to be realistic. That's not going to happen right now. I'm not saying it'll never happen, because I believe in encouraging people to move up and get all that they want out of their dreams. But you got to start somewhere. So let's roll it back and see what you can afford at $20,000. And let that be your first home. and you build up some equity in that first home, and then you roll up to the next biggest home. And, you know, so it might take you 3 or 4 homes before you get to Short Pump, if you ever get to Short Pump. But it's just being realistic. The other thing is we all want these big houses. Like, I'm working with some people right now. They have a lot of kids. And so he and his wife, they want a 4-bedroom. I think they have, I want to say, 4 kids, 4 or 5 kids. And they're like, well, we want a 4-bedroom. Well, again, they're making 20-something, maybe 25. And 4 bedrooms are expensive. So on a $25,000 salary, you're not going to qualify for a four-bedroom. Plus, they wanted a new house. So I had to have the conversation with them that, you know, I know you might want each child to have their own bedroom, but that's not realistic. When I was growing up, I never had my own bedroom. There were 5 kids in our house. And even though we had 5 bedrooms, we had my grandmother was there, and then you had children that were different sexes, but none of us had our own room, you know. And so why people coming up now think that their kids have to have, you know, if you have a small family, then yeah. But if you've got 2 or 3 kids, it's not likely that each one is going to have their own room, because most homes that are affordable are 3 bedrooms. So the parents are going to have 1 room, so that leaves 2 bedrooms left. So if you have 4 kids, they're going to have to double up. And that's okay. You know, and that's what's being realistic. So I think you have to have the conversation with yourself, looking at your situation now, what your living situation is now. If you're overcrowded, yeah, you might want a bigger house, but still get it within reason. It's just not realistic to think that your first house is going to be a 4-bedroom or a 5-bedroom. And even though my parents, we ended up having a 5-bedroom, that wasn't our first house. That was our 3rd house.
Okay.
So, again, what I'm saying, you move up. You don't start out there. And so I believe my parents' second house was a 2-bedroom with a attic, and they converted the attic to a bedroom for me and my 2 sisters. So my parents had 1 bedroom downstairs, my grandmother had 1, and then we were upstairs in the attic. So that wasn't even a real room, but, you know, we were kids, so we didn't have to stand tall, you know. So you make do. And that's what people have to be realistic about. Housing is better than paying rent. When you own a home, you are building something. But you still have to be realistic. We can't believe the hype that's on TV, you know. We have to work within our budget and within our means, because what happens is if we don't, we're going to overextend ourselves and endanger ourselves of falling prey to foreclosure. And you don't want to do that, and we don't want you to do that. So that's one of the things that when we counsel, we lay it all out there, and we have that conversation. And sometimes it ends up being a good conversation, and sometimes it's not. I mean, honestly, today I had a young lady in my office that was crying because she couldn't get the dream that she wanted right now. But as I told her, that's just right now today. I mean, unfortunately for her, she had a surgery last month that caused her to be out of work for a couple of months, which meant her pay was reduced for a period of time. And now she's got mounting medical bills. So the timeline that she was on had to be extended, and that's okay. And what I tried to explain to her, the good thing, I know you're disappointed, but the good thing is, look at how you've been saving. She had over $2,500 in her savings account. So she wasn't a failure. It wasn't a denial. It's just a delay. You can't buy right now because you need to take care of these debts and get that out of the way, get your income back where you can meet your budget, because when we were doing the budget, it was in the negative. You can't buy a house when you're in a deficit. So sometimes you just have to face what the facts are right now today and then make the plan for how you're going to get back to where you want to be. You know, when I shared before that I had to repair my credit when I first got divorced, I was looking at $20-some thousand worth of debt because I had co-signed for a car for my ex-husband, and when we split up, he said he, you know, would keep the car and pay for it, but then he lost his job and he couldn't. And so he didn't want to deal with it, so he filed bankruptcy. So because I had co-signed, it fell on me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that, you know, that's a lot of money between that and the other things that we had. So there were some things realistically that I had to do to deal with that. I had to get a roommate. Did I want a roommate? No. I was going through a divorce. I wanted to be by myself and wallow through that for a minute and then give myself time to get it together. But that wasn't something I was able to do because realistically I had lights that had to be paid. I had food to put on the table. So I needed someone to help me with the overhead in the house. And that's the conversations we have to have with ourselves. And at times when I would get frustrated and didn't want to do it, I would remind myself this is just temporary. This is something I have to do for right now in order to get to where I want to be. And that's what I did. I had a roommate to help cut the expenses of the house so that I could deal with that debt. And then later on, I was able to buy a home, buy a car, and do all the things that I needed and wanted to do. But it was a process.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where being realistic comes in. It's a process.
Everybody, this show has really, really been informative. And there's somebody out there, either online or listening by phone, or somebody's going to listen to the archives that needs to have that conversation. There's somebody out there that needs to sit down with somebody and really have a face-to-face, just lay everything on the table conversation. Because, again, this purchase could very well be the biggest purchase that you're going to make. And you definitely want to make sure that it is a dream come true. And it can be. And for a lot of people, it is a dream come true. To everybody that's in the process of buying a home now, I want to say congratulations.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. You did it. You're here. You're ready. It's about to happen. And for those who are preparing, congratulations. 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 It's a process. You're on the road. And just by hearing this show today, it's going to go a long way in helping you to prepare, because I know that this show is beneficial. And I know that there's somebody, Donna, that wants to talk to you. So if you could you please give your information so that people that are hearing and will hear this show and they want to reach out to you over at the Southside Community Development Corporation, you know, may need to have that conversation, can reach you?
Okay. My phone number is 804-231-4449, extension 101. And my email is Donna, D-O-N-N-A, at scdhc.com. And I will advise you to probably email me. You will have a quicker response by emailing me your questions, because when I'm counseling, I can't answer the phone. So it may be a couple of days before I get back to you if you call me. But if you email me, I should be able to get back to you within the same day.
Okay. Awesome. We got another call before we go. Let me get this one. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Hey, Shawana. Welcome back.
All right. Last question. this was very helpful tonight. But my last question is about income. Do the banks look at, or the lenders look at, gross or net income?
Gross.
Okay, gross income. Okay. All right, that's my last question. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Everybody, Donna, was there, I mean, we covered a lot. I mean, and I just want to, again, commend everybody and thank everybody for tuning in, because Again, this is a conversation that, see, there are some communities that do this. There are some communities that have this type of discussion around the dinner table, okay? And that mm-hmm. might explain why there are some communities that are further ahead than others. But we right. had it tonight, and it's around dinner time, so let's call this our dinner time chat, okay? And I just want to encourage everybody, though, to go back into the archives. We've had Donna Stallings on several times. We've talked about credit counseling and credit reporting. We've talked about personal finance. All you have to do is just scroll down the archives, and you will see shows with Sister Donna. And also, I just want to encourage people that are tuning in for the very first time. The name of the show is Health, Wealth, and Divine, also known as Jawanza for Life, and we discuss a lot of different topics. We talk about health, okay? A couple of my special guests are Dr. Ruby Lathan. She cured herself of thyroid cancer after the doctors shared with her that she had thyroid cancer. She said, I don't think I'm going to go out. I need my thyroid. No, you can't take it. And so she changed her diet to a vegan vegetarian diet and actually went back. After a year, cancer was gone. Brother Coy Dunstan cured his mother of cancer in both breasts, the liver, and the colon after the doctors had given her 6 weeks to live. After he did some research. Now, he had just graduated from law school, okay? So he was a researcher. So he knew how to research. He started researching and found out that a plant-based diet was healthier for the body than eating meat and dairy and all this other stuff. He took his mother, meat off of dairy, off of all of that, started juicing, giving her herbs, all this other kind of thing, fasting and all of that. And he kept going back to the doctor, and the doctors were first surprised that she was still alive and then was saying, look, I don't know what you're doing, but keep doing it. Eventually, after about a little less than a year, they ran every test. The cancer in the breasts were gone. The cancer in the colon was gone. The cancer in the liver was gone. She was back in the pulpit preaching, giving glory to God.
Yes.
Okay. Cancer gone. Okay. Yes. So these shows, these are regulars on this show. Okay. We talk about everything. The last show we did with Dr. Lathan, we talked about fibroids. Sisters, if you got fibroids or know of anybody that has fibroids, you need to hear this show. Okay. We talked about arthritis, obesity. We talked about, you name it. These shows are in the archives. We, on this show, advocate a holistic-based diet. We don't eat meat. We're vegan, vegetarian. I mean, we're into yoga and, you know, all of that. So that's what this show is about, and we like to educate people on the process of how you can change your diet, I like to say, to a live it. Okay, so those shows are in the archives, all right? So I want to encourage you to go back and check those shows out as well. But, Donna, I just want to say thank you so much. This show has been very, very powerful. Information is powerful if you use it, and you really laid it out today, my sister. I mean, you really laid the whole grant thing out. You broke it down. Is there anything that we have not discussed about grants yet up until this point that you'd like to share or any final remarks for our listeners today?
I think that's it.
Well, almost.
Just take advantage of them. That's all. You know, we never want to give money back, you know, to the government, because when we give it back, then they think we don't need it and they won't give it again. So if you're thinking about, you know, buying a home, now is the time to do it and research and find out what resources are out there for you so you don't leave money on the table.
And they're really making it an incentive. They're giving all kinds of incentives for first-time home buyers. I mean, these grants, and I mean, they're really basically encouraging, here, look, you know, here, take this money, you know, buy a house, but you just got to be ready. You just got to be ready.
Exactly.
But Shawana's back. One more.
Okay.
Oh, no, I'm done. Thank you. I'm thank you so much. Let me press one. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Everybody, my special guest has been Donna Stallings. Awesome, awesome information, my sister. Again, thank you so much for your time. Closing remarks, again, don't give no money back, right? Just, you know.
Right. Don't give any money back. Don't leave money on the table. Take advantage of these resources. Yes,
thank
yes,
you.
Yes. Free money.
This has been awesome. This has been powerful. Again, everybody, my name is Jawanza. That's J-A-W-A-N-Z-A. Sounds like Kwanzaa with a K. I hope y'all had a wonderful day. Until the next time, everybody, thank you so much. Donna, I'll be in touch. Peace and blessings, y'all.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.